This is a special episode of BulaNetwork.com because, well, I recorded it originally as a video. Unfortunately, I had some major audio sync issues, and I looked like one of those foreign martial arts films. Yeah, you know the kind, where they say things or their lips move, and then 2 seconds later you hear the sound. Yeah, it didn't turn out very well at all. You can go see the show notes, though, at BulaNetwork.com. I do have a photograph there where I point to one of the pieces of gear that I used to make an illustration at some point in this audio. So anyway, go to BulaNetwork.com and you can read all about it. Thanks for listening. The year was 1961. Before a joint session of Congress, President Kennedy made that grand challenge. Well, more of a declaration, really. By the end of the decade, America would put a man on the moon. Lofty. Quantum leap kind of stuff. Well, okay, we've got a better part of a decade to get that done. It energized the country. It energized a group of people. I have read through the years with great interest biographies and other writings of people who were involved in early NASA, those people that were involved in the Gemini and Apollo programs, you know, those early guys. And you look at the technology and you look at the brain power, and for the most part, they were a group of young people. But you look at the technology that they had at their disposal versus the technology that exists in anybody's home today. And, boy, it makes the feat even more remarkable. And in 1969, it happened. And like many other Americans, I was huddled around a large curvature black and white tube, watching this grainy picture as the astronauts got out of that lunar module. It was remarkable. It was just remarkable. People who were involved in that work, even now and even years later, when they became old people, said it was the best work of their life. Well, how could it not be? Buzz Aldrin would have horrific times when he returned, because the stories were told that as a kid, he looked up at the moon and always wanted to go, and fulfilling a lifelong dream as an astronaut was a great thing. But when that's been your lifelong dream and you've accomplished it and you come back to Earth, well, now what are you going to do? He had his demons. But that's not the point today. The point is this quantum leap idea, this big challenge. And we love those, don't we? We love those. We want to do the grand big thing. In the late 1800s, if my memory is correct, that famous Italian economist Pareto took a look at the wealth of Switzerland and realized 80% of the wealth was held by 20% of the people. I guess out of curiosity began to take a look and take a look and take a look and realized that whole 80-20 kind of a ratio, it just seemed to come up over and over and over again. And today we commonly call it the 80-20 rule. And people apply it to all kinds of things. We don't necessarily have statistical proof of it. We just, you know, you hear businesses talk about how, you know, I just want to really focus my efforts on that 20% of the work that will afford me or get me the 80% of the results that I'm looking for. I guess some people measure that kind of stuff, but boy, I know an awful lot of people who don't. They just... It's just this gut feel. I feel like if I just focus on this 20%, then I'll get 80, and I guess it's just a whole lot of this. What parent hasn't told a child? I did. Well, what child hasn't heard a parent say, well, you get out of it what you put into it. Now work hard. Devote yourself. Making us believe from a very early age that input equals output. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Ask the two people that won that Powerball lottery. I mean, what was that? $200 and some odd million apiece. I don't know how much they spent on tickets, and I'm not advocating the lottery, by the way. I don't play, don't participate, wouldn't participate. But I'm opposed to gambling, so life is a big enough gamble. I don't need to go getting stupid. And let's assume that they spent thousands of dollars on tickets, and I doubt they did, but let's assume that they did. Okay, thousands of dollars, and they got 200 and some odd million. And now, yeah, the input doesn't equal the output there. Somebody said that the statistical odds, that's a hard thing to say, that the statistical odds of hitting that lottery would be about like an amateur golfer hitting 50 consecutive hole-in-ones or holes-in-one. It'd be pretty tough. Two people did it. Hooray for them. But what we don't hear is we don't hear about the tens of millions of other people who spent money, got nothing. No, input doesn't always equal output. Sometimes just the output is far grander, and sometimes it's not very good at all. And who among us hasn't, well, thrown some money away? I think I did a podcast about it, you know, how I lost $50,900 and managed to keep my wife or something like that. I don't know. You can go to the website and search for it. You know, we make investments and we hope they work out. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes we don't even get a return. Sometimes we lose our investment altogether. We want to believe, we want to con ourselves into believing that a couple of things, and let's tie them together. We want to believe that going for that quantum leap thing, that's, you know, it's that go big or go home mentality. And I used to really believe that. I still do believe that somewhat as a leader. I still do believe in that somewhat as, you know, somebody that's trying to rally an organization, rally a group of people. It's really difficult to stand before a group of people and get them to work harder and let's give it everything we've got because we're going this quarter, we're going for a 2% increase. It doesn't get anybody, you know. I mean, the whole room will collectively yawn at that kind of a challenge. So we do need some, you know, big goal to aim for, but life isn't made up of that big goal every day. Here in Dallas, Texas, obviously an NFL team that has had no success in 10 or 11 years, but, you know, does every team enter the year with the faith and the belief that the Super Bowl is possible? Surely some of these teams realize we're not even close. I could be wrong, but it's a great goal. Meanwhile, you've got 16 regular season games you got to play. And you hear coaches say it all the time. If a coach is coaching a game this week, but the really big game that everybody's anxious about, that's next week. He'll say, well, you know, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. You know, we just take it one week at a time. And they do. I've been in coaching situations, but come on. Everybody is a bit preoccupied with that game because it's the bigger game. That's what gets our juices going. It's why you see teams falter sometimes before that big game. They're so amped up for that big game, they do overlook that to get from here to there. Yeah, we got this other game we got to play. But isn't daily life made up of that other game we got to play? a kind of seemingly small thing. In recent years, I've grown to believe in the power of the tweak. I used to not really love that term. And it wasn't for any particular bias that I had, because as an audiophile, a guy that's been into audio for as long as I can remember, audiophiles are really fond of tweaking. Input equals output. No, it doesn't. And any audiophile will tell you it doesn't, but still they tweak. I remember being on a hi-fi sales floor when the very first little cables that are inside a tone arm, the cables that, and they're really thin cables. I mean, you had to have really nice needle nose pliers to little connections that go on these four little posts on a cartridge. You don't even know what a cartridge is. It's a needle. I'm talking super thin wires, four little thin wires that are yay long. $200. Now I'm back in the 70s, kids. This is big money. Oh, the monster cable was decades away from even coming to the planet. People bought them. Audiophiles bought them. I remember us connecting these things up and sitting in sound rooms for hours, just listening and listening and listening to record after record, speaker after speaker, and this amplifier and that preamplifier and this turntable and this cartridge and, you know, just trying to listen for a difference. And unless it was psychoacoustic, meaning we thought we could hear a difference, you couldn't hear any difference. Why did people buy those? Because it was cool. Because it was cool. It didn't make a quantum leap difference. Truth be told, it didn't make any difference at all. But it was a tweak, and that's what audiophiles do. They tweak. Hey, take a look at this. Take a look at the Yellow Studio and... Well, here, I can demonstrate. Let's just demonstrate, shall we? This is the power of a tweak, and I want you to get this. Now, I got a rack of gear here. Here, let's turn a light off, and maybe you can see this a little easier. You see these green lights that are kind of flashing? This top piece of gear is an audio processor. I've got a number of these. That's an audio processor, too. For this microphone, that processes everything. Now, with one button, I can tweak the sound. And I'm going to warn you in advance, it's not going to sound very good. It's going to sound very, very different. It's the power of a small change. And it's one button. I'm not going to turn a knob. I'm going to hit one button. You ready?
It doesn't sound the same at all. Does it? Sound like I got my head in a tube. It sounds like... It does. It just sounds like I've got a big barrel around me.
Hit the button again. Presto changeo. The magic returns. It's the power of a tweak. Here's what I want us to get. Apply this to your business. Apply this to your life. Yeah, we want to aim high. I'm not telling you to set your sights low. I just want us to kind of merge all these ideas together and give this some serious thought, because here's what I believe to be true. Here's what I know to be true. I was watching a couple of seasons ago, and I don't watch this very regularly, but I stumbled across that Discovery show. Maybe it's a Discovery show. Top Shot. Have you ever seen this thing? And those of you that shoot guns, I don't, you'll understand this. And so, you know, you got six or eight guys and gals, and they're all just crack shots. And in one particular episode, they're shooting at a target that's a few hundred yards away. Long shot. And they've got the scope, and they've got a spotter. There's wind and there's whatever, humidity to take into account. They could move the barrel of the rifle through the scope. They could see it. But if you were watching them take the shot, really hard to tell that they're even moving the thing. They could move it just slightly. I mean, ever so slightly. And they could miss the target completely. They could miss the shot by 10 feet. once it got out there to the target. Spotter gives them corrections to make because the spotter tells them that's where your shot landed. Well, they know where they aimed, and so now they adjust their aim. And they adjust their aim just ever so slightly. And over the span of a couple of hundred yards, that 10 feet goes away. Bullseye. They hit the target. Just a tweak. Just a tweak. It didn't take a quantum leap change. A quantum leap change wasn't needed, and it made all the difference in the world. We get our heads wrapped around, there's some big, big thing we got to know. There's some big, big thing we got to do. And boy, in so many cases in our businesses, it's a little adjustment here and a little adjustment there. I know it's not exciting. I grant you that, which is probably why so many people refuse it. There's a story in the Bible you may or may not be aware of. There was a man who was a prestigious commander. A lot of authority, a lot of power. And there's this one little description that the Bible gives of this man at the end of describing how terrific he is. But he was a leper. Naaman the leper. Now, leprosy, I spent time in southern Louisiana, and there used to be a leper colony down in south Louisiana. There still may be. You don't see that disease much anymore, but in ancient times it was despicable. No cure. Naaman had a little handmaiden, and she was a devout person. She followed God Jehovah. And so she told him about a prophet that she knew who could probably take care of his leprosy. And so he goes to see the prophet. Well, the prophet doesn't come to the door. He sends a man to the door. Well, now, Naaman's just not very pleased. He's this great commander. He expected to see the prophet personally. The man tells Naaman that the prophet has said that God has instructed that if you will go dip in the River Jordan 7 times, you'll be cleansed. Closes the door. Well, Naaman is incensed. He's absolutely out of his mind mad. He's not going to go dip in Jordan. Jordan's a muddy, nasty river. Back home, they had all kinds of rivers that had clean water. Why couldn't he go dip there? Well, that's not what God said. That's why. The servants tell him something that's pretty powerful. And we need to get this. I don't care if you're religious or not. It's still a good story. If the prophet had told you some great thing to do, wouldn't you have done it? Well, how much better then to go dip into the River Jordan 7 times and be cleansed? Well, evidently that persuaded him because he knew it was true, and you know it's true, and I know it's true. Oh, we do some great thing, but yeah, okay, it's doing that small thing. It's doing that 20% thing to get us big returns. It's making that minor adjustment in the scope so that we can not shoot 10 feet away from the target, but we can actually hit the target. But the change was not perceptible to anybody other than you because you're looking through the scope and everybody else is watching you, and we can't tell you've moved the barrel of the gun at all. You've hit a button and you've completely altered the sound of things. You've hit another button and you've completely made it magical again. It's a tweak. It's a really small thing. I don't know what that small thing is for you. I can tell you for many of us, it's right here. It's a small shift of believing that we can do it. You do know that the world is full of successful business people who once were failures. You do know that the majority of successful business people were repeated failures. You do know that, don't you? It's true. Research it. I don't care. pick your favorite entrepreneur or pick your favorite internet celebrity. Do enough research. They failed. There's failure in their past. I guarantee it. There may be failure in their future. But there absolutely was failure in their past. They didn't find any secret. They likely didn't make any quantum leap kind of a thing. Now, it appeared perhaps like a quantum leap, just like the shooter who takes a more accurate aim and it makes all the difference in the shot. That's quantum leap difference in result. But the action that was taken, that wasn't so much quantum leap. It was an adjustment. Maybe it was a belief. Maybe it was confidence. Maybe it was stumbling into a market. Maybe it was great timing. Maybe it was serendipity. Maybe it was a connection. Maybe it was a person that came into their life and it made all the difference. Be very open to the little things. Be very open to the tweaks that might exist in your life. Be very open to the opportunities that might be standing right in front of you, but you're looking past them to the big game. But the game that's right here might make all the difference in the world. My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is BulaNetwork.com. This is the Yellow Studio.